Right? Ah, good. Are there any questions? Because now we're going into the real point of the thing. This is just the beginning. There'll be no break. There's never a break. A joke to an Englishman? We have no sense of humor. You know that. Yes. Fire practice. Well, we're going to do a fire practice. Yes. Well, I'm speaking right to me, so since you and I are one, I hope it's getting to you too. Well, that's the beginning of useful service, because from that you'll be guided into what you can really do. Service is both inward and outward. Service of the divine and service of your divine self through worship and adoration. And then from that, getting the strength to do the service in the world and always having the dialogue between the two kinds of service. So it's not just an inward path, because if you do it seriously, after you've really worshipped and adored and opened, you'll find you're getting some pretty strong instructions to get out there and start cleaning the floors of the world. Any more questions? Because we can really do something. Yes. The purpose of being in this body. If you have wine and you want to share the wine, you need a cup to pour the wine in. Right? God is the wine and longed to share Godhood with God and created a universe out of God in which this sharing and this intimate ecstasy between God and God could take place, which cured a little of the loneliness of God, but then realized that without a cup to hold the wine, you couldn't drink it. The body is the cup. The body is the cup, and this life is the cup in which we can drink the wine of the feast. And when you realize that, that totally transforms your relationship to your body and your relationship to experience. You know why? Because it shows you that being a human being is actually infinitely greater than being a disembodied spirit, a light child. Because the light child can only have the light aspect of God. But the human being, who is both transcendent and immanent, both in the soul and in the body, can experience both sides of the Godhead, because the Godhead is just as present in every slug, in every fern, in every banana, in every single living thing, in every part of the Godhead's creation as it is in the light that's creating it. That's the miracle. So being in a body and having a soul means that you can participate in both sides of the divine presence, and that you can come to be a complete hologram of the complete divine presence in this life if you give your life to being possessed by the fire, so that the fire can take over every aspect of yourself. That's the great mystery of the body. Of course it does, because the fire practice is what gives the energy to divinize the body. You know, the body changes in mystical experience. The body is itself transformed as the heart opens to the fire. The fire comes in. The fire doesn't only open the spiritual centers, the fire also changes the entire experience of the body and actually changes the cellular structure of the body. And Tibetan doctors can tell you what stage of meditation you are at from taking your pulse, because they know from long experience in the laboratories that were the monasteries that every realization is registered not just here, but also here. Which is one reason why you see the bodies of the great saints changing. Look at Ramana Maharshi's body at the end of his life and at his face compared to at the beginning of his life. You'll see that his body actually changes color. It becomes golden. The golden body arrives. Sri Aurobindo's body at the end of his life, you see, it's almost shining gold. People who were in his presence said it was very, very strange. His skin itself gave off this luster of flame. The body is not a curse. It's the opportunity to have the complete experience. This is the real teaching. And it's this teaching that body hatred and sex hatred has totally obscured. And it's very important to get back to it. It's the real teaching of the resurrection. Why did the Christian church so hate bodies when the final sign of the Christ was the resurrected body, matter transfigured by love? That's the whole thing. And the whole point of being baptized again and again in the flame of sacred passion is so that that sacred passion can transfigure all of you and really transfigure, change from the bottom and the top right up and down, the whole being. And I know this in my own small way. I know my body is a totally different experience at this time in my life. And my body itself experiences its life in a completely different way. I move differently. The whole way in which I can express and use my body is utterly different. You become very much more like a dancer as the work of love goes on. Your whole being slowly becomes an expression of the invisible fire. And that is what is needed, to dedicate the whole being to that so it can be transformed. And the fire practices and the heart practices are a sublime way of doing that. We're going to do one very intense heart practice, and then we're going to do the descent of flame into the body so that you'll experience that for yourself. Okay? How about that? If you want a break, take it now and come back in 5 minutes. Is this useful to you? Are you getting something? Yes. And you may not know something extremely important to understanding Rumi. The key to understanding Rumi, in fact, is that Rumi was totally and finally penetrated by and obsessed with Jesus. And Jesus as a sign, Jesus as the holiest of a line of prophets that culminate in, for the Muslims, the holiest of all prophets, Muhammad, is the one that brings in a particular form of divine passion, which is absolutely central to the whole path and which is crucial for the birth of the full divine self. So that at the very core of Islam and at the very core of Sufi mysticism is an immensely potent vision of the divine motherhood of God, and of the way in which, if you access that motherhood, it will help you give birth in your body, heart, mind, and soul to the living Jesus, to the living prophet of divine love. In the great Sufi tradition, my friends, it's said, and I want to anchor it in the great Islamic and the Sufi tradition just to show that this is a universal truth which far transcends either Islam or Christianity and should be the place where Islam and Christianity open their hearts to each other, link hands, and start dancing joyously around each other, because it's the same revelation. Jesus and Rumi and Muhammad are blood brothers. They're brothers of the blood of the Sacred Heart. And what they're bringing is the stupendous birth of sacred love consciousness in the heart, mind, body, and soul. In every age, there are beings who have polished their heart enough for the question of the age to shine out in them. Abraham gave us the love and the hope that never sets. David gave us, this is the Sufi tradition, the works and the worth of art and songs. From Solomon flew Gnostic magical sciences like birds out of his brain that was impregnated with paradise. And from Jesus came pure formless love and its release from the shackles of the law. And from Muhammad, the reunion of law and love in a stupendous prophetic realization. This is the Islamic tradition, isn't it? And this is the secret Sufi tradition. And this is why Mary is so important for the real Sufi mystics. One of the traditions of the prophet says, and it's one of the most mysterious, paradise is at the feet of the mothers. Paradise is at the feet of the mothers. And that means that without the infusion of the sacred compassion, the sacred passion for humility, the sacred passion for adoration of the mother of mothers, of Mary, of the supreme servant of the One, of the supreme vessel of the One, of the supreme transmitter of the One's infinite compassion for all its creatures, without her, the paradise of divine human life, the paradise of divine human consciousness cannot be entered. Because she and he birth together the child of divine human presence that is the full path. So what I'm going to do with you now are two supreme Mary practices, which you can do as Sufis or as Christians or as mystic independence, or as whatever in heaven you think you are. But for God's sake, turn to the One who is appearing all over the world, who is appearing as Mary, but not as the little girl, blue-eyed Heidi that they think Mary is, but as the Queen of heaven and earth, announcing to the whole world the necessity of sacralizing life, and announcing to the whole world that the motherhood of God is flooding the world with grace, and that unless we turn to it from wherever we are, we simply won't have the full realization of who we are, which is the children of the Father, Mother, Allah, the children of the One, and we won't know where we are, which is in the body of the motherhood of God, which is radiant with her bliss and power and peace and beauty. So this is totally important. And one wonderful way of connecting with Mary is, of course, to say her name, just her name, as a mantra in your heart. But we're going to do it in two wild ways. Because if you say Mary, 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 you know, especially if you have the image of Mary being this very sweet, rather shy little girl, nothing is going to happen. Something will always happen because Mary will always appear in some form, anywhere. She's here. One great Christian mystic said that Mary will be in pain until the end of the world because she is restlessly going from every person to every person, seeing what they might need. So beautiful. She's your mother. She's your mother. And one wonderful way of connecting with her, and this is done in the secret circles, is to say her name with tremendous exaltation and joy. It's as if she has implanted in each one of us a cry of supreme and sublime gratitude for being embodied, for having a mother, for having so glorious and tender and sublime and powerful a mother, and that when we really find that note within us, which we were born to find and sing and then work from in the real, to incarnate in our actions, then we can be in direct resonance with her, in direct vibration with her. And everyone has a different note. Everyone has been created with a different sound of gratitude for the motherhood of God at the core of their being. So what this practice means is that you go deep into yourself. You imagine in the deepest way, in the most sacred way, what the motherhood of God means to you. If you want to use her face, use something that you know about her. Use something that has truly touched you about her. Find that note that is authentically yours, and then stand up with all of these people in this room and sing it out or shout it out exultantly, celebrating that you are her child and that she has given you this note, and that by singing it out, by shouting it out, you can become one with her vibration, her torrential mercy. This is not what they teach you in Catholic school, by the way. Because this has real juice to it. This is the Sufi juice. Ah. If you ever come into her presence, and I hope many times, I hope with all my heart that you will, it's a presence beyond anything that any words can describe. It is so utterly and shatteringly beautiful. And the love of her for you is so shatteringly beautiful. and the beauty of your love, your secret love for her that is implanted in you as your most potent secret, as the most potent secret of adoration in your heart, is so shatteringly beautiful that part of you will just want to fall on the ground and worship this beauty in silence for the rest of your life. And the other part of you will want to go out in the world like a mad person and dance and sing and cry out, I have a mother and you have her too. And you have no idea yet what it means to have such a mother. But one day you will, and now and then you'll understand why I'm dancing like this crazy Mali person. Right? And that's the craziness we want to find now. So I'm asking you to strip away your fear of embodiment, to strip away of your fear of being here, to concentrate your experience of all of the joys of embodiment, of drinking the wine from the cup that the mother has given us and has made us of life, and concentrate in the heart chakra, in the silence of your heart, all the love that you have ever felt for this aspect of God's infinite mercy, infinite compassion, infinite gentleness, infinite wild forming power, because she is also that. And then, after I've counted three, to just get up and sing and shout that name, Mary, out into the whole sky and sea and air, to all the four directions, and see what happens to you. But first, go inward, so that from the depths of your need and from the depths of your adoration can spring a great, great cry. You know, don't you, that the whole meaning of the crisis of this time is to get humanity to the point where it will be able, all of it, to cry like this for her, at which moment she will be able to arrive in her full glory and her full power, because at last we will be grateful and hungry and acknowledge our need for her wisdom and for her guidance in every aspect of our lives. And then she will come, she will return, and she will flood our minds with her divine embodied wisdom. Because as Kabir said, we are the children of the transcendent absolute that is our father, and of the embodied Godhead that is our mother. And Mary is the embodied Godhead. Jesus is the child of the transcendent father and the embodied Godhead mother. And that Jesus is waiting to be born in you with the cry that you are now going to give. And every time you do this cry on your own, go into a forest, go by the sea. The sea is a wonderful place to do this cry, because you're crying out to her, and there she is, burning and foaming and laughing in front of you. Or if you want to do it in your home, go deep. Passion is a feminine splendor. A feminine splendor of receptivity and a feminine splendor of wild expression. Both. And by calling down the power of the feminine, you are feminized enough to know both and be both. Do you get it? So this cry is very important. One. Two. Three. Mary! Let's go deeper and do it one more time with every single cell of our body. Many people have still got their spectacles on. Take them up. What do you think you're doing? This is not Anglo-Saxonia. We're now Sufis. If you're a Sufi, Suf. If you're an Anglo-Saxon, Sax. You need need your mother like oxygen, don't you get it? You cannot breathe without your mother. You cannot feel without your mother. You cannot exist without her grace being poured into you and irrigating every part of your being. And when you cry out, you must cry out with rapture and agony and gratitude and thank you. Mary, come on. Don't make me age prematurely. You're doing great, but you can do better. I want you to find that place. Everything will change when you practice from that place. Then you look at your little dog and see that it's her looking back at you. And your body will weep with joy. And you'll know why you're here and why you're in a body. Is to know that degree of sublime love that she is irrigating you with at every moment. And when you find that place, you will lie with your beloved in your bed, your human beloved, and you will worship that man or that woman as her divine gift to you. And every kiss will taste of her sublime passion. And every exchange of love juices will be different parts of her wine running into a cup which you drink. This is not poetry, my friends. This is the blood that Jesus is trying to get you drunk on. And it's blood that comes from her. It's her blood. So let's try harder. Nothing will happen in Sufism until she is brought right into the core of the revelation, because that will heal the patriarchal stupidities that still deform some of the tradition. As she will heal the world. One, two, three. Mary! Just sit down and enjoy the vibration. You do that before you say the mantra, Mother of God, save me. Then when you say the mantra, Mother of God, save me, or the Hail Mary, or whatever you say, then you'll be in the space of the real hunger, the real gratitude, the real need, because you will have given yourself. Right? Give me some feedback. I'm lonely up here. Tell me what you're feeling. Tell me what happened to you. Throw out some adjectives, some phrases, anything. I'm starved for love. Yes. And your cry came from the gratitude for the blue planet that Mary's wearing the blue robe of. You know, one of the most astounding things is to be in Galilee and be in the place where he gives the Sermon of the Mount and stand there and realize that what he's looking at when he's giving the Sermon of the Mount is the Sea of Galilee and the mountains around it. And the mountains are maternal breasts and the sea is a burning blue. And then you get it that Jesus is speaking out of the heart of the revealed glory, the embodied glory of the mother. And he's speaking the words of the mother. He's speaking her stupendous, loving, sublime, humble silence. And that silence is being finally voiced through the voice of the sacred androgyne, the man birthed as a man-woman because of his sublime love for her and him together and in balance. And that's the secret of life, that's the secret of Christianity and of Sufism, and that's the secret of the future. And if you want to find out more about it, read my book, Son of Man. Tell me any more. Tell me more reactions, 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 reactions. You're not. Sometimes it's a great block to have a biological mom. Absolutely. You realize that it was always the Mother of God that you were calling on. Ah! Now you can go on calling her on her for the rest of your life. $10. That's fabulous. Find that realization always when you cry to her, because it will help focus your whole life. Anybody else? Yes. That is a beautiful thing to say. Well, one wonderful way of being with the beloved in bed is to be yourself the mother in bed with the father. The mother is in bed with the father, and out of their endless lovemaking, they are creating the universe and all the universes. And the great Hindu mystics say that every single thing is wet with the love juices that are streaming from the endless, glorious copulation of the mother-father. And when it's so stupendous that, because it releases you from all this body hatred, everything is saturated with the juice of their unbelievable love. When Shiva meets Parvati, they make love incessantly for 40 million years. I think that's right. It may have another 3 zeros at the end. You know, the Hindus, they love all these kalpas. But that love makes, so that when you, either you see him as the mother in that, or the whole gift of this intimacy as the mother, or you go even crazier, and imagine that you are the mother making love with the father to create the whole universe, and you worship him as the living father, as the Krishna, as the Shiva, as the Christ. And that gives the whole radiant potency, the divinization of sexuality. You see, for a Christian mystic, heterosexual, the woman is Mary Magdalene, and the man is Jesus. For a homosexual, both are Christs, worshiping the Christ in each other. For a lesbian, it could be both are the mother worshiping the mother in the other, or they could take whatever role. Obviously, roles are infinite, and he may want to be the mother, and you may want to be the father. But experience that rapture. Let it happen. Because that illumines, that is the true meaning of the marriage of, that is what marriage is supposed to be. It's supposed to be the site of this great explosive tantric encounter. Yes. I think so. Well, I mean, I feel I know so. That's what I'm trying to do in my marriage. Eric gave me that stupendous gift of being the beloved in form, and the gift of being wholly unashamed of his beauty and his sexuality, and initiated me, and the mother initiated me through him, into this amazing... This is what many of the Sufi mystics are really talking about when they talk about the relationship with the beloved in life, which reflects the beloved in reality. It may not have been sexual between Rumi and Shams, and in fact, almost certainly wasn't, I think, but the love that they knew had a totally sublime physical dimension. That is certain, because it had to have if it was going to be a complete love. So whether you call that homosexual or homoerotic, what do these words matter? They're all cheap rubbish, so let's get rid of them. Let's have the experience and forget about it. Thank you. Jacob. No, because then after making the call, then you just say the name in the silence of your heart from that place that you've uncovered by the call. The call is like a hand that reaches into your chest and strips your heart naked. You imagine that your heart is clothed with all those clothes. The call, if you make it properly, just takes a knife of light, and just rips those bloody clothes off your heart. So your heart stands naked. And from that nakedness, then you say, in silence, in the core of what you've uncovered. Do you see? The call is like a bomb that you drop in a quarry to make the coal, to expose what's in the rock. Then with the exposed rock, you pray. You go from that place into her. Does that make sense, Jacob? Do you see how it would work? Do you see how it would work, everybody? Yes? Because if you don't, doesn't matter. But if you've experienced some new electricity from making that call, that place that you experience it from is the place where you say the name. One more question, then we'll do the other one, because we mustn't get too mental. Yes. Oh, yes. 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 Your mother you may have been your mother's mother in another life, and also probably you'll have to be your mother's mother in this life. Many of us have the experience of the mother as the negative mother, which drives us to find the positive mother in the divine. When we found the positive mother in the divine, we can turn to our own mad, crazy mother, difficult, bitchy, unloving, whatever she may be, or all of those three in a magnificent cocktail of weirdness, and then we can love her with the mother's love, and an amazing healing takes place. The biography is over and the loving has begun. Great. That's it. These practices. Somebody wrote to me from, I think it was Poughkeepsie, and said, "You are outrageous. These practices are doing terrible things to me." And I wrote back and I said, never claimed that these practices didn't work. This is not vanilla ice cream. You open this book and you do these practices and they have things happen to you. They will, because this is divine technology. Fancy complaining that something works. Virtual reality must have its consolations after all. One more question. Yes. Well, that is a very beautiful way of doing the cry. You know how the early Christians prayed? They prayed with their hands up like this. And many of the Hindus do it. And if you do it, you connect immediately with the light above and the power below. The feet with the power below and the light above. Try it in the next one. Yes. 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 To birth the love presence. Because you wire yourself to that unconditional love, it floods you, it releases every cell into its true potential, and that love presence is then impregnated in you, and then what practice does is give birth to that love presence. Practice and meditation and service birth slowly until your whole being has become an emanation of that love presence, and you are slowly becoming the Jesus that you are. That's the process. Yes, one more. Yes, that's very good. Oh no, you've uncovered something that's been trying to get out of you. Now you know that it's there. And now you have the responsibility to turn that agony into extreme compassion. You will always need that agony. Is there a safer way to get through Fana? There isn't. But you see, the point is that when you know what Fana really is, you start praying that everybody goes through it. It's not because it's so terrible that we should avoid it, but because that terribleness is essential to the shattering of the false self, so that this agony can be felt, so that that agony can be turned into extreme compassion. And when it's turned into extreme compassion, you're living the human divine life. And if you've gone through that process in any way, you really do somewhere want everybody to go through it as extremely as possible, because the extremity of the love that is born from the extremity of the death is worth anything. Yes, but now it's because you must ask her to transmute that agony into the fire of service. Well, get back there and rave on. It'll happen. You can't do it enough. You will, until she will help you and she will give you the power. And now we're going to go into the agony, because this is exactly what the second practice is about. Ah. Many, many years ago, I went to Dakshineshwar to visit the place where Ramakrishna lived. And it's one of the holiest places in the world, because Ramakrishna is, for me, the supreme pioneer of the adoration of the Divine Mother in all of her forms for our time. He was a Hindu, but he went through the Islamic discipline, the Sufi discipline, the Christian discipline. And actually, if you go into his room, you'll see that he has the Madonna and the child by his bed. And Ramakrishna knew that the mother had given all of humanity its religions, like a Bengali mother would cook a white fish for all of her children. Different tastes for different children, but they all came from her. And this is a huge realization for the world. And it's only when the mother comes back into all of our consciousness that we will dwell on the unity between us and not on the separations. But that's not what I'm talking about. I went there, and being in his presence, because he's still there, he's potently and amazingly there, just was an experience of tremendous bliss. And I walked around, saw the sadhus by the Ganges, and walked around the bazaar, and suddenly I saw a very crude but extremely powerful painting of him and her together. And this painting totally blew my brains out. Because instead of it being him in adoration of her, this is what you'd expect, isn't it? The saint, the devotee, lost in rapture of the gloriously appearing mother, a much more holy secret even was revealed by that painting. Because what was happening was this, that in his simple bare room, he was sitting on a chair, and the divine mother, exhausted, tired, in pain, sad unto death, as Jesus was in the Garden of Gethsemane, is lying on the floor and putting her head in his lap, and he is stroking her hair. I didn't get the secret for a long, long time, except that it was such an overwhelming shock to see that image. It really was. You know how some of the images of the divine can totally change your life. Just seeing one can initiate you in a secret, disturbing way. When I first saw, for example, the double ambiguous androgynous aspect of Shiva, that is Shiva Adinarishvara, when you see a statue, one half of which is a gorgeous male, and the other half of which is a gorgeous female, and you allow yourself to be disturbed and ravished by the holy beauty of that ambiguous androgynous figure, and realize that you're looking at yourself, realize that you're looking at every single human being, realize that you're looking at reality, and realize that you're looking at the ultimate form of beauty, that changes your life, because you're initiated into the secret of the androgyne being born in you. It begins the initiation. Similarly, with that image began an initiation which my own experience has only deepened. And that is this, and it will really change your devotion to the mother when you realize the power that you have to console her heart. The power that each one of us has as her child to console her heart for the unbelievable cruelty and pain and degradation and humiliation and rape that is being imposed on her by our pollution, by our greed, by our exploitation of nature, by our burning of the animals, by our unspeakable treatment of animals in our laboratories, by everything that we are doing to torture her in all of her million, million forms. That is a huge holocaust of pain that she is always burning in. Her heart is a fire of infinite suffering, as well as a fire of infinite bliss and infinite peace. Because every raped child screams out in her. Every abandoned AIDS patient dies as her in her. Every humiliated gay man strapped to a fence in Montana to die in the posture of the crucified Christ is dying is her in her. And because her heart is infinitely exposed by infinite love at every single millisecond, it is all happening in her always. Is there a safer way to go through Fana? I don't think so. Because this is the heart that you awaken to on the path. The heart isn't just in bliss, my friends. That's the New Age fantasy. The heart is boiling in sublime outrage. The heart is bleeding in sublime agony. And if there's one text in the world that expresses the mystery of this late initiation into the fullness of the motherhood of God, it is a text which I hope I can find, because this is the whole truth as I understand it now. And it is such a sublime text that when I first read it, I just couldn't read anything else for a week, because it is something that once you see it, you see it. So if you give me a minute, I will try and explain it, but just try and feel that agony that is the motherhood of God. What on earth does somebody who says, is there a safer way to go to Fana, imagine that what they would feel if they felt for 1 second, 1 second, 1/2 of 1 second, what the mother side of God feels at every moment with 1/2 of her. If you felt for 1/2 of 1 second what she is going through, then your agendas and your vision of yourself and of your privacy and of what you think your life is and who you think you are would be utterly, utterly rubbled away. You would not exist. You would faint away into the splendor and the agony and the glory of so profound a love that it could accept so absolute a grief. Do you see? That is divine experience. And this stupendous text, which is in Perfume of the Desert, shows that this initiation is a late initiation on the path. But you must have it. Because when you have it, you become both father and mother. And the androgyne is born. But it's not a happy initiation. It is an initiation of absolute, irrevocable heartbreak from which you have nowhere to hide. Whoever loves God will win God's friendship. Whoever becomes joyful will fill with desire. Whoever is full of desire will become astounded. Whoever becomes astounded will become brave. Whoever becomes brave will reach God. Whoever reaches God will enter into union. Whoever enters into union will become a knower. Whoever becomes a knower will be drawn near. Whoever draws near will never fall asleep. And the rays of sublime heartbreak will engulf. Whoever draws near will never fall asleep. You'll never fall asleep because you'll never say, as you pass the drunk, vomiting in the gutter, as I've heard, I'm afraid, Sufis say to me. That's his karma. That's God in the gutter vomiting, you crazy fool! You'll never look at the hordes of poor people on television and say, well, it's a kind of collective karma, and they've chosen this role, you know, because they've chosen to be poor and starving, because they're representing poverty to us. If that's the divine plan, it's an incredibly unsuccessful one, don't you think? Because poverty, anger, aggression, etc. have been... This is bullshit! And filth! And blasphemy that hardens the heart. It's when you look into that picture and you see yourself, you see the mother, and she's starving. And you and your world and your choices, you know, are starving her. It's then that you start to say, I refuse this system.